Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. Something funny is about to happen in Columbus, and if all goes well, something funny will be back again next August. The inaugural Columbus Comedy Festival kicks off next week with venues including the Columbus Funny Bone, the Attic Comedy Club, the Nest Theater, and more. We'll host local, regional, and national comedians. Here to tell us all about the festival is Walker Evans, co-founder of the Columbus Comedy Festival and co-owner and operator of the online publication Columbus Underground. Welcome to All Sides, Walker.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the basics. Why did you want to bring a comedy festival to Columbus?
Well, we produce other events through Columbus Underground. Our probably most popular one is the Columbus Coffee Festival, which is in its ninth year this year. It's grown over the years. People seem to really like it. My wife, who's also the co-founder of Columbus Underground with me, the two of us are big comedy fans. There's been other versions of comedy festivals in the past that have kind of come and go over the years. And it just really felt like the right time to reboot it and kind of do our own version of it.
Last year, the Columbus Underground published an article written by you declaring that Columbus was in its golden age of comedy. Can you explain what brought about that declaration?
Yeah. I had run, I mean, very specifically, I'd run into local comedian Travis Haywisher on a bike ride. And we were kind of talking, and I was getting his feedback, you know, as a performer, because as a attendee of comedy, it felt like, you know, there were new clubs opening, the Don't Tell events were kind of going strong. And he said, as a performer, he's like, yeah, this is not, I asked him, is this back to where it was before the pandemic? And he said, no, this is like as good as it's ever been for performers. So that kind of got my wheels turning, and I started talking to other venue operators, promoters, and performers, and everyone really sort of seemed to gel around this notion that like something special was going on nationally, but locally as well.
So did that factor into your decision to launch this festival now as opposed to, say, 6, 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the comedy scene has always been kind of bubbling. You know, we have the Funny Bone out at Easton, which has been going strong for 40 years at the Continent before Easton. But, you know, the local scene, the open mic scene has always been a little bit off the radar, I think, of the general public. But I think that's starting to kind of bubble to the surface and people are able to access comedy in different ways. The Attic Club in Old Town East opened about a year and a half ago. And then the Hashtag Club opened in the Short North last November, I think. So between those and Don't Tell and a lot of different pop-up events, there's a lot more ways for people to access comedy. And it feels like maybe combined with like the rise of social media and like short form clips, more and more people are aware that it's an entertainment form they can seek out in their own towns.
We're going to be talking a little bit later with Jason Banks, who has made a living off those short form clips on TikTok. But I want to talk a little bit about the festival itself. So Who are we going to see? Where are we going to find tickets? What nights are they going to be performing?
Yeah. So the festival runs from next Wednesday, August 14th through Sunday, August 18th. So 5 days. Columbus Underground is programming shows at The Key, the Columbus Performing Arts Center, and Mad Lab, all of which are downtown. But then we have 5 other venue partners that include the Funny Bone, the Attic, Hashtag, the Nest Theater in Old North, and Don't Tell, the pop-up events. So everyone is going to be doing stuff all day, every day. There's a lot of overlapping events, so it's sort of a choose-your-own-adventure. Different styles of comedy, you know, from big headliners to locals. There's improv, there's sketch comedy, there's film, there's stand-up. So really just a whole lot of stuff for everybody to choose from. And we put a website together, columbuscomedyfest.com. So the whole calendar is on there. You can sort by chronological, you can sort by venue, you can sort by performer, and find what you're looking for.
Yeah, it says 5 days, 150 comics. That is a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, yeah. So, I mean, that includes, you know, the big headliners. A lot of times you go to a show and there's a host, there's an opening act, there's a feature act. So sometimes there will be 4 or 5 people that set foot on stage. Or if you go to see an improv troupe or a sketch troupe, there might be 5, 6, 7 people on stage. So all together across all venues for the 5 days, it's over 150.
What made you want to include sketch comedy and improv in this festival?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times when you think of going out to see comedy, you think by default about stand-up. It's the most popular form. But, you know, there are a lot of really funny local and regional sketch and improv groups that I don't think should be overlooked, especially when you consider that a lot of times people who go through that career trajectory and pathway are the ones that end up becoming television and film stars. You know, you hear about people that go through Second City or The Groundlings, which I'm sure Tara will talk about a lot in a bit. But that pathway to like writing and creativity a lot of time lends itself to the stage in a different way. So those are people worth watching as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you think of Saturday Night Live, the most famous sketch comedy show on television. Whose Line Is It Anyway? Was a really funny, like, improv show. So there have been, it does enter into our culture, particularly actually on social media. You see a lot of sketch comedy on social media.
Yeah. And I never really thought about this, but Hannah Roames, one of the co-owners of Hashtag and the Short North, put it this way when we were talking. She said, everybody loves The Office, and so much of The Office is improv. You know, like there's a script and they write, but then they just freestyle. Like some of the most iconic lines from shows like The Office come from improv. So why not go watch an improv show for $5 in your own town?
Yeah, they've said that about comedian and actor Jim Carrey, that a lot of his best lines were off the cuff.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it's cool to see these kinds of options, you know, in places like in the Short North, which, you know, a lot of people don't look at the Short North as a place to go for entertainment anymore or for like performing arts. So really great to see that and... you know, the Nest in Old North, kind of giving people an option to check it out.
Yeah. This is sort of an esoteric question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think makes something funny?
It's a great question. Highly subjective, right?
Yeah.
You know, everyone's sense of humor is a little different. Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, you know, if you want to be scientific about it, it's just about subverting expectations, right? You know, you think someone's going to go one way and then they go the opposite and that triggers that sort of reaction. But I think my sense of humor, I love the absurd. I love, you know, comedians that don't really fit like a standard mold. So whether they're just, you know, a little weirder, a little nihilistic, a little self-deprecating, that's the sort of stuff that really makes me laugh.
Yeah, I started my career out on the Cops and Courts beat, so I don't know if it was that or just the way I'm born. I have a little bit of gallows humor in me, which is, you know, it's dark. It's not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have some of that. I'll send you recommendations for who you should go to watch at the festival, because we will have some very dark people.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. That's where it gets real, right up to that line of what people will accept or won't accept.
Yeah.
How did you go about vetting the comedians, about choosing who you were going to pick?
Yeah, yeah. So back in January, we reached out to the headliners to see who we could get, you know, what
big names.
Yeah, what big names, you know, who was available, who was willing, who was in our budget. So a lot of the acts you see are sort of rising stars, you know, people that have been doing it for 10 or 15 years. You know, some of them have released specials or they've made appearances on Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon. But they're not, you know, they're not Dave Chappelle. They're not Bill Burr. You know, they're not
an Ohioan too.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Is he coming?
Not that I know of, but who knows?
Maybe he'll attend.
He could make a surprise appearance. Yeah. So you know, we reached out and started booking people that way, but we also opened up a submission process so that locals and regionals could apply, and we ended up with almost 250 applications, about half from in Ohio and the other half outside. So a lot of
like an audition process.
It was a submission, so they would submit a video file. So that meant that we had 250 videos to watch.
Oh, that's fun.
Score. Yeah, we had a whole team to help out with that, but it was a fun process. You know, a lot of good. I don't want to say some were bad, but you know, they're like low quality iPhone video, so it's really hard to get like a good taste of someone in like 5 minutes. But we had that process and then used that to kind of fill in all of the sort of like 5 minute, 10 minute slots all throughout the festival. So but we wanted to have a team with that because it shouldn't just be about what my personal style of comedy is. You want something for everybody.
So what do you think success is going to look like for you at the end of this first Columbus Comedy Festival?
I mean, one, hopefully everybody has a good time, whether they're a performer or an attendee. We hope to, you know, everybody gets paid at the end of the day, from the venues to the bartenders to the performers to, you know, anyone involved in the festival. And really, you know, part of the goal is to help the locals build a broader fan base. You know, I want someone to attend this festival and see someone local that they have a good time seeing and then want to see them again and come out throughout the year, throughout the next year. I think that's a metric of success if we see more comedy attendance year round. But I'd also love to maybe plant a little bit of a flag for Columbus for comedy, because just like music, you see a lot of times when people go on tour and they'll do a Cincinnati date and a Cleveland date and they'll skip Columbus and just assume we'll drive. And I think the goal is to sort of say, like, Columbus is a big city. We're a comedy city. We appreciate this. And next time you're on tour, you should make Columbus a stop.
Dangerous question for you.
Okay. I have a dangerous answer.
Do you have a favorite local comedian?
Favorite local? I like a lot of people. Do I name one or several?
You can name several people who you're definitely going to make time to see this week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I recently gave a shout out to Peter Brick because he had the best submission video. He submitted a full hour special that was like professionally produced. It like blew all of the iPhone videos out of the water. So shout out to Peter. Neff Johnson is a local comedian. He's probably one of the hardest working locals. He's on stage a lot. He puts in the time. He reflects. He's working on a sort of short form like film series that's really well produced and really well thought out. So you can tell that he's like a comedy nerd. Like he studies. He appreciates. He refines. Hannah Roams again at Hashtag has been doing a great job kind of cultivating the scene there. I mean, there's so many to name. Henry Allen is a great local who's been doing it for a long time and really kind of coming into his own with his latest work that he's been working on this year. Put me on the spot. I'm trying to think. Nikki Winkelman is hilarious.
It's like a Oscar thank you speech. You're never going to get out everybody that you want to say.
Yeah. Apologies to everyone that I did not just name, but yeah, we have a really solid stable of comedians. Like, you can go to a show here and you will be happy with what you see.
You also mentioned there will be video.
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing a couple of film pieces. We're kind of kicking off the festival a little early this weekend at the Gateway Film Center. We're screening The Aristocrats.
Okay, if you don't know what The Aristocrats is, I'm going to have to be incredibly careful how I say this.
Yes.
I have seen the movie. It is about a joke, an incredibly controversial joke that can take all kinds of crazy, disgusting, strange turns.
Yes, yeah.
And how different comedians have approached telling that joke. Everyone from Gilbert Gottfried to the late Bob Saget. It is, I don't know how to explain it. It's funny and gross and weird at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. It's controversial.
It is not a joke for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. But it's controversial by design. You know, you're trying to get a reaction out of people and see how far you can push boundaries. So, yeah, the documentary came out in 2005. My wife and I saw it at the Arena Grand Theater that is no more downtown because AMC wouldn't carry it. It was rated NR. It's NR. It's not rated.
It is.
So shout out to Chris Hamill at the Gateway for being willing to throw it up on the big screen because it's not something you see on the big screen anymore. And I think a lot of comedians, local comedians I really enjoy, are like in their 20s. So they've never seen this documentary. You know, it came out when they were like 3 or 4 years old. So I'm really excited to kick that off. But in addition to that, we're going to show some short films again from Neff Johnson, from a local sketch and film creator, Adam Little. At that, Adam also has his own show on Sunday of the festival called A Lil Show, where he's showing some pieces. Jason Banks is one of the stars of a lot of his videos. What was the other film piece? There's a couple. At Studio 35, Travis Irvine and Irvin Ross they do sort of a Mystery Science Theater 3000 style show. That I think that's on the Saturday night of the festival, so it'll be a late night movie. They're showing Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh my goodness.
A cult classic. So the movie
plays both funny and creepy at the same time. It hits that sweet spot for me personally.
Okay, yeah. You don't have an aversion to clowns.
I hate them, but I also like the movie because of the absurdity.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll play on the screen, and then Travis and Irvin and then a rotating stable of comedians sort of do crack jokes the whole time. It's pretty fun.
Oh, is it like a Rocky Horror Picture Show style where you like comment while the movie's going?
A bit, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And so they have local comedians. They'll have one for the first act, one for the second act, one for the third act.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of stuff. There's sketch, there's variety shows. One of our comedians is doing a late night Friday midnight show, and it's going to be a talk show style event.
Oh no.
So wacky hijinks. We're bringing this act from Chicago called Chad the Bird, which is sort of, it's a puppet. It looks like a Muppet. Has a bit of a surfer voice and does these like 15-minute monologues on like pop culture topics. So one of the recent ones was about the Olympics, and it was mostly how polluted the rivers were in Paris and how they're trying to clean up all
of that. So in
that
vein of like Jeff Dunham.
Well, not a ventriloquist. So there's like a stand and the actor is down behind it.
Oh, like a literal puppet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But really funny, well-written monologues, and the delivery is great, and it's fun. So there's a lot of different stuff.
You're already stacking up my calendar here.
Yeah. A lot to choose from.
So one more time, where do we find tickets? How do we find all the different comedians that are going to be appearing? Like, what's the website?
Yeah, so columbuscomedyfest.com. Everything is on there, organized in different fashions. We have social media accounts if you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. But go to the website because 100% of it is right there and real easy to find.
That was Walker Evans, co-founder of the Columbus Comedy Festival and the co-owner of the Columbus Underground. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. Coming up, Columbus's improv scene and the evolution of sketch comedy. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from The Embedded Podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides with Anna Staver. We're talking about what makes us laugh this hour, ahead of Columbus's first comedy festival. And over the past several decades, Americans have increasingly enjoyed improv and sketch comedy, capturing audience with their spontaneity and sharp wit. Saturday Night Live was at the forefront of this comedy revolution. It's a show that's become a cultural touchstone, launching countless careers while demonstrating the power of comedy to reflect and to satirize our world. Joining us now is Tara DeFrancisco, co-founder of and artistic director and instructor, that's a lot of hats, of main stage performer at the Nest Theater. Welcome to All Sides, Tara.
Welcome. Thank you so much. Yes, I love hats. Thanks for having me.
I love a good hat, too.
Oh, yeah. You have to wear them. Perfect.
I went through a real fedora phase in the 2010s that I'm like low-key still embarrassed about, but, you know.
Fair enough.
I had a moment.
Yeah, perfect.
So Columbus's first comedy festival is going to feature more than stand-up performances. Attendees are going to be able to take in local improv and sketch comedy. What is the improv scene like here in Columbus?
It's beautiful. I'm from Columbus. I was born here, but I worked in Chicago, Illinois for 17 years on the main stages there in that space at like IO Chicago, Second City, etc. And I run a camp called the Improv Retreat. And those people asked me from Columbus to come back and start a brick and mortar because they were hungry for a space they could kind of call their own at the Nest Theater. That was almost 10 years ago at this point. And I think the community at that point was about 25-ish, like stronghold people doing improvisation. But now that's exploded to something towards 1,500 people.
Oh, my goodness.
It's really huge. I mean, to the point now that other people in other cities are now looking towards the Nest and other improvisational spaces in Columbus as sort of a really big, new, wonderful hub for people to work this art form, which is exciting. So we have kind of a neat punk rock vibe, I'd say, in Columbus, but we also have professionalism, which is a rare combination.
Any chance there'll be talent scouts at this Columbus Festival?
It's possible. It's just me in one of your hats. Yeah, just looking around for new comedians. I think that generally speaking, people are really taking note of CBUS for sure, though. I mean, we have a lot of people now that it's not so imperative that you need to be in like the classic New York, LA or Chicago hubs at this point, or even Toronto. I think now that Columbus is sort of on the map as a new comedy city. And not only are we like treating each other with a lot of love and reverence and respect, but we're excited about the work other people are doing and tend to root for each other in a Midwestern way. So like maybe agencies are taking note that you can kind of high tides raise all boats with each other.
How do you think improv contributes to the comedy landscape?
Oh, so much. It's interesting because I've done stand-up before. I'm mostly an improvisational performer myself, but I'd say that a lot of our students and teachers and performers tend to gravitate towards improvisation, even if they aren't looking for improvisation as their primary function at this point. A lot of people do stand up and they take improvisation to be more fluid. So, you know, crowd work is so giant now, especially with like the expansion of TikTok and Reels and things like that, where people don't want to like burn the content of their stand-up set, but they want to interact with the crowd and like show who their personalities are. So I think a lot of people now are kind of using improvisation as just a way of staying limber. And that goes for regular time too, of just like what's real life, what can you apply from the art form to kind of make you feel more ready to navigate human experiences. And then in stand-up that really translates because you're not just stuck to your material. You're hopefully kind of indulging in like what's happening right now and being more present about it.
I've always kind of wondered if it would help as a radio host.
Oh, yeah, Anna, this is your chance. It's absolutely so helpful because you feel really pliable. I mean, it's also just a really nice energy. If you haven't taken improvisational classes or like indulged in like games or that kind of work, it really makes you realize the state of play is so necessary for not only, you know, not only just being good at that fluidity, but also just finding joy as a human adult. I think that's probably worthwhile these days for everybody. So it's so interesting that you're so good at play till, you know, probably 6 or 7 years old. And then we kind of hardwire it out of ourselves and have to find it again.
I may have to take you up on that. I've never taken a single improv class.
So. Oh, okay. I've got a target, everybody. You've heard it here.
I would be a neophyte, but
that's perfect. We like it that way. That's great.
So what makes improv, in your opinion, such a unique tool for engaging with audiences? Or even, I think it really explores new comedic ideas. It allows you to play with things in a way that isn't as permanent as, say, a scripted piece in a set.
Yeah, that's well said. I think that's something that we really experience. I tour a two-person show called Hear the Improvised Musical with my partner, Rance. And we've noticed that it's sort of, you know, it's an ethereal, impermanent art form. So there's positives to that, which is this show, you know, this show doesn't exist forever. And like, if it's not your favorite one, or it's like something you can let go because it's more topical or something like that, it goes away. But the downside is, you know, if it's an incredible show, it also disappears. So I think that there's some life lessons to be learned inside all of improvisation, which is like it's only right now. And some people have like recorded improvisational shows, and that can be really successful with like a 3-camera setup or something. But generally speaking, like it's kind of fun because you're in the same room together experiencing it all at once. And how that makes you sort of appreciate the moment of all of us gathering right now and what that leads to for an audience truly laughing together in the same space.
Yeah, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Was a show that really
formative
brought improv to the forefront.
For sure. And it still is like the thing that people still reference, even if they have other kind of things to look at now. There's a lot of people that are starting to like film their sets, or even our show here has been like filmed before to be shopped for networks and things like that. And no one's cracked the code exactly how to do it because it's such a, you know, like I said, like an ethereal art form that sort of disappears. But it's getting there. I think it's getting there to a place where you can kind of see that the audience is part of the experience, and that is part of the magic. So when it's filmed too statically, it can't like work, but it has to be that we're one weird organism together kind of having this experience tonight.
Yeah, I think one of the things I always liked about Whose Line Is It Anyway is that the comedians in the show can't keep it together.
Yes. Yeah, what's wrong with a little joy, right? I mean, I think that they...
SNL, they try to hold it together. Sometimes it does not happen.
Exactly. They don't always succeed. I think it's such a fortunate life that when you have the funniest friends in the world and then you're basically kind of taxed with not laughing at them, that's a pretty hard feat, you know, not to respond to everything they're doing because you want it as well. They actually call it corpsing in Britain, in the UK, instead of breaking here in the States. It's like if you see someone laugh at their own jokes or someone else's jokes. But it's such a fun idea to think if you hold it together, maybe more people will as well. But it is fun to see the occasional like shattering in front of all of us. Yeah.
Sketch comedy has also really had a revival on social media.
Yes.
Like the number of people making a living on TikTok doing these like episodic, short, huge, hilarious skits.
Yeah, it's so big. And I think a lot of my friends from Chicago and here have found this like wild success just sort of doing things they would naturally do in an improvisational show and making them episodic or like you're saying, very short, like a minute long digestible pieces where people are just so hungry for that like very quick boost of what's this thing. And maybe they wouldn't have had access to it before because it is still in like, you know, major cities and like kind of brick and mortar like hubs. So it's so cool now that there's more access for people to see it in digestible little pockets.
So what kind of improv are you guys going to be offering during this Columbus Comedy Festival? What do you got going on? Where are we going
to
see it?
Yeah, I believe we have five to six shows dependent on one of our talent's booking agencies. But we have this we have Wednesday, Thursday shows are all stand-up feature shows that have six or seven comics being featured with the host. So that's the stand-up nights is Wednesday and Thursday night at the Nest Theater. Friday night, we have a double feature. They mostly blend like improvisational teams and stand-ups all happily under one roof doing one thing, which is kind of what we wanted that was ideally what we wanted our mission statement to be when we got here and made the Nest Theater, was like, let's make it a comedy cheers where everyone actually celebrates each other and doesn't necessarily have disparate homes. So stand-ups and improvisational people and sketch people and experimental theater people could all be together doing their thing. And that's what we're doing at the festival too. So Friday night at 7:30, Alex Falcone, our old friend from Improvisation, who is now a very successful stand-up comedian, especially on TikTok, is headlining a show called Armando Seabus, which is he tells true stories live from the audience, that they ask him questions and he tells stories. And then improvisational comics and comedians do scenes off of his content. So it kind of blends the two worlds really nicely. And then 9:30 hosts a number of teams and a number of comics. And then Saturday has the same thing, a number of teams and a number of comics all under one umbrella doing improvisation. It's really fun.
Yeah, I want to talk about the transition from improv and stand-up into acting.
Yes.
What do you think carries over? Because you see a lot of acting giants who got their start in comedy.
For sure. There's a lot of improvisational people that are kind of blending into that. And certainly, like, a lot of sketch people we revere as sketch comedians or stand-up comedians that have turned into these very, like, serio comedic, you know, award-winning actors. And it's probably because they're more open to the human experience. I think if you're really good at making people laugh, you're probably also really attuned to noticing emotion in general. So you become good at drama once that vulnerability is open. And it's probably harder to work in reverse. Like, it's hard to like necessarily be dramatic and then turn funny. But if you're funny, you're probably looking to like see what the barometer of the room is like anyway, or you're always taking the temperature of like what this feels like. So you're really open and empathic to people's energy as you're moving. And that lends really well to acting. It lends really well to like becoming a dramatic actor.
Speaking of like reading the room, I got to ask, as somebody who now talks live on air for a living, how do you handle those moments when you've lost the audience or you know it's tanking? Like, how do you pivot? Because internally, personally, I know when I flub something, I'm just like screaming on the inside.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You just got to keep going.
Anna, that's never happened to me, so I can't. No, you know,
you're
that's
like,
really,
I don't know what that like experience
yeah,
is like
I just,
for you.
I'm so sorry. No, it really, I think the answer here is tuning into what you feel is truest. There's a really nice anthem inside improvisation specifically. I guess that's what I'm talking mostly about today. That's like, if we tell the truth, that is what's funniest to most humans. So even calling forward what's happening right now in your experience as that character tends to get the audience back, in my experience. There's an actual book called Truth in Comedy that's written about how audiences in comedic theory respond most to what's truest. So they just want you to be, you know, student counsel for the human spirit on stage and like tell the truth as the character you're portraying. Often it's like when people are not quite vulnerable or a little bit there's desperation for that comedy to have a result. That's when you'll see the audience sort of kind of like not quite link with you. And it's like desperation is rarely funny. So
it's kind of it's about presence.
It's about presence.
Not to be too like woo-woo about it.
I know. It's really hard not to be kind of woo-woo about it, to be honest. Like it's about presence. It's probably about confidence, to be honest. And if you feel like you're driving well and you do, then people like they lean in, you know, and if it feels like you're unstable and don't feel good about it yet, they can sense it. Like the audience will feel what you put out there. So they're kind of, you know, a microcosm of what's happening on stage. They tend to respond. If it feels good, they will think it's good too. That's often the case.
You know, I want to ask you a little bit about the evolution of comedy, because we've gone from vaudeville and like the one-line puns to stand-up, narrative, like comedic storytelling.
Yes.
It's been such a change in the last 100 years.
It really has. I think that there's a real surge for... I think a lot of people were worried after the pandemic that people wouldn't return to live theater. And I think people are so hungry. I just saw Steve Carell say something about this as well. But like people are so hungry to be gathered in a room and sharing experience because we've gotten so untethered as humans, I think, in the last few years. And a lot of that is really cool. You have access right through your phone, but you don't have necessarily like room full energy of people all enjoying something all at once. That's so rare these days. So I think people are kind of gravitating back to theater like they did many years ago, you know, 100 years ago. I'd say that Commedia dell'arte is probably the thing that started improvisation, quote unquote, but it became very popular in the 20s and 30s and then in the 60s when Bohemians had a hold of it. So it's funny that you're saying it's kind of a Bohemian thing. And that became a big surge of like writing sketches and like putting weirder things out there or improvising and seeing what sticks. And I think that stand-up got really heightened in the 80s. And now everybody's just kind of celebrating these like fun amalgamations of like all of them together, you know, and seeing what happens from that.
A lot has also changed for women in comedy. I mean, we look back on like Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers. They were sort of trailblazers. But now it's really common to see women on stage talking about dating, sex, their bodies, all kinds of things you never would have seen a couple decades ago.
Definitely not. It's so refreshing for me. I think when I started taking comedy classes and immersing myself in, I was the only woman in the room in that space when I moved to Chicago in the late 1900s. No big deal. And so I think now it's so exciting because I think our theater, we are just looking at the diagnostics, we don't often check, but I think our theater itself, The Nest, is something like 60-40 at this point with women versus women and non-binary and men. And I think that's really kind of exciting because it doesn't mean there aren't men in that art form. It means that they already have access probably in traditional cases. So it's really cool to see that people think they're more welcomed into the space that may have not been there before.
One of the downsides, though, is comedy is often about the society in which we live and what we consider acceptable and unacceptable. So there are comedians whose jokes have not aged.
Or they've aged so much. Yeah, exactly.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you look back at somebody like Bob Hope, for example.
Yes.
Had a lot of homophobic jokes.
Yes.
A lot of very questionable material, but like it was funny to his audiences in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
It is not funny in 2024.
Yeah, there's so much to be said for like something that was said at the time and what we were permissible about at the time, I think. And I know we're very proud of this space, the Nest Theater, and many of our friends making improv and stand up in town are like looking to, it's really new since 2018 to 2020. People are putting codes of ethics inside theaters and comedy clubs now. So there's this like possibility, and that doesn't mean it's less funny. It means that there's more willingness to like make sure that everyone knows boundaries and can step into like being really positive about what they want to say or having support for things that they think are risky to say or whatever it might be, and knowing that there's good intention behind most things, even if they fail. Like, so that people aren't like limited about what they can say in comedy, but they can try things and then get critique and help around those things rather than kind of like worrying about whether they're, you know, so and so uncanceled or something like that.
Yeah, Walker and I were having a conversation off, like during one of the breaks, and he said it's about, you know, punching up, not down.
Exactly. I think that that's also just good comedy rules, having nothing to do with what you feel about that statement. I certainly lean like kindness over everything, but I think that punching up tends to be funniest also. It's punching down is like we're already picking upon a group of people that needs support and doesn't have amplification. So why not punch up at things we can like play with and toy with where there is no result of pain? That's good.
Final question is the most difficult one. What are you most excited about seeing at the comedy festival?
Ooh, Anna, you asked me a beautiful question, which is, and something I'll reveal as a producer and performer myself in town, we don't get to see anything. That's the hardest part, is we're on stage when you're coming to see us. So what a challenge. That's like the only downside of living a hilarious, fun, fruitful comedy life is, where are my friends? I bet they're having shows as good as ours right now somewhere else. So go see everything. I'm going to try to make it to one of the shows at the Key this coming next weekend, and I'm obviously going to be at a couple of our own, but I'm also hosting ones at our own, so I think that I'll probably be locked there for a few days.
That was Tara DeFrancisco, co-founder, artistic director, and instructor at Main Stage Performer at The Nest. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, comedian Jason Banks talks TikTok, social media stardom, and the future of comedy. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from The Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. From Shakespeare to Lenny Bruce, Johnny Carson to Jon Stewart, comedy has evolved right alongside of us. Moving from vaudeville to stand-up, puns to social commentary, we're talking this hour about what makes us laugh and what our jokes say about our culture. Joining me now is stand-up comedian and Columbus native Jason Banks. You can catch him on stage at the first ever Columbus Comedy Festival next week. Welcome to All Sides, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to start with the big question right up front. What makes something funny?
Oh, man. They didn't tell me it was going to be a quiz, man. This is...
I guess we'd call this a gotcha question.
Yeah. And you got me immediately. I would say what makes it funny to my audience is if I find it funny. So this might not be the best answer, but I just write what I think is funny. If I don't think it's funny, I'm not going to say it. But if I think it's funny 100%, I will try this joke 3 to 5 times before I stop doing it if people aren't laughing. And then I'll still know that it's funny and that people just don't understand how funny it really is.
But, I admire that confidence.
But yeah, I don't know what makes things funny, man. It's definitely not slapstick. It's just, I guess...
Well, I will say that the oldest theory of humor dates back to Plato and other ancient Greek philosophers, and it posits that people find humor and laugh at earlier versions of themselves.
Yeah, I could say that. I have some. I'm about to go headline a fair tonight, and I was just thinking of stuff I could talk about. And when I was young, we tried to show rabbits so we can get in the fair for free. Because if you show animals, you have to pay to get in. So my mom was like, I'm not paying $5 for each of you guys go to the fair every day. So she went out and she got us these wild rabbits. And we had to take these wild rabbits to the fair and try to show them. And like my rabbit's just hissing at the kid. Everybody else was holding their rabbit and the judges just petting it. And my rabbit's just freaking out. And so I'm thinking about trying to tell this story tonight at this fair I'm going to. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Young versions of ourselves do stupid things and make us laugh.
I think that's sort of the foundation in some ways of your TikTok sketch comedy. A lot of it is you're impersonating your son, Derek.
Right.
Or the caricatures. And you've also created this caricature of his friend, Blind Adam.
Yeah. That all happened during the pandemic. My shows were canceled. So I was trying to build a following. And back in the day, I made this tweet just about kids eating free, which is something my parents used to do as well. We're like, you know, we're 15, but we're acting like we're 10 years old, so we can have that free meal. So I tweeted something about it, and it was like my biggest tweet. So I wanted to turn it into a skit, and I used my fake son, Derek, and started creating these videos, and it just kind of blew up and shocked me. And yeah.
Yeah, you get some pushback for your portrayal of his son and for Blind Adam. You get some hate, but I like that you work it into your comedy, work it into your stand-up routine, sort of taking ownership of it and making it your own.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think the blind thing was going to be so bad. I just thought it was funny if he had a blind friend that couldn't see what he was doing. So I was doing it for a year, and it actually went well. And then like a year in, I started getting these DMs from a real guy named Blind Adam and his friends. And they were like, they were just going in on me about like, this is ignorant, you should take this down. And so of course I put it in my stand-up and put a special out talking about it, you know.
Questioning whether Blind Adam, the commenter, is actually blind. Because he had some pretty specific hate for your details of your videos.
Yeah, yeah. He was explaining what he saw in the videos, I guess. Like, he was saying stuff like, hey, man, like the video where the blind guy's drawing the cat. And I'm just like, how did you see that? It threw me back. But I guess he's just partial blind.
Yeah. You know, I think how history views comedians is complicated. You know, George Carlin's famous 7 words you can't say on television are kind of all over cable now. And as a country, I think we're just a lot more comfortable with swearing. But Bob Hope, who I referenced earlier, was an American comedian who was popular in his time in the 30s through the 60s. But his comedy reflected the values of that period. And his material included a lot of casual sexism, racism, homophobia. We look back at it and we're like, oh, that's not funny.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was funny to people in the 30s.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a lot. Like, if you go back, you go back to like just Eddie Murphy's comedy and hear him say some things that people won't say out loud anymore. So, or even in movies, like we'll go back and watch an old movie and be like, wow, that's, I can't believe they said that. And it'd just be like a movie from the 80s. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, there's even pushback now to Mrs. Doubtfire, which was a movie I grew up with.
Yeah.
But nowadays there's a really negative take for in certain circles, not all circles, but I think what's fascinating about that is I think comedy always stands on the edge, or good comedy, of what is socially acceptable.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I didn't realize there was pushback on Miss Doubtfire, though.
Yeah, it comes from certain segments of like the LGBT community about how like transgender people might be portrayed, how cross-dressers might be portrayed, that kind of question.
Okay.
I don't know how serious it is, but like there are people out there that are like, oh, that's terrible. You shouldn't watch it.
Okay, I'm getting rid of it.
But that's like the question, right? I mean, what is socially acceptable to say? Who gets the right to say those kinds of things? It's a big conversation.
Yeah, and you know what? I stay on the edge, but I try to stay on the right side. I know sometimes I might, usually it's a live performance thing where I'm just having too much fun. Like, I just did one the other day. I started feeling bad after I went home, but the guy had tattoos of kids on his legs. The kids were his girlfriend's kids. They weren't his kids. So I was just going in on him about, I don't even say what I was saying on the air, but I was just going in and really making fun. And we was having so much fun. We were having so much fun that like I would try to move on, and then I'd apologize. I go, I'm so sorry. I just keep thinking of more stuff, and I just keep making fun of him. And then I got in the car and I was driving home going, if he has tattoos, what if these are like remembrance tattoos? Like, what if these kids have passed away? And here I am for the last 15 minutes just going in on him. So then I just prayed and I said, I hope these kids are still alive, doing well. And he just got a tattoo because he's just
the kind of guy that gets a tattoo
of somebody else's
kids. I mean,
kids.
It's, yeah, that's dedication.
Yeah,
to the relationship.
I hope they stay together forever, or you just get two random kids on your legs.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of people who get like their partner's name tattooed on them. I'm like, bold choice.
Yeah, yeah.
I have never felt that level of commitment, and I've been married 16 years.
You're like, still no.
Oh no, I would never tattoo somebody's name on any part of my body.
You can write it with a pen, so I can clean it off if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. So how? I gotta ask, as somebody, you now have about 9 million followers on TikTok. Impressive.
Thank you.
What possessed you to put the first video up?
So it was kind of what I said, but I'll give you more of a story to it. I was performing in Virginia right as the pandemic's kicking in. So I'm just learning about how all the toilet paper is gone and stuff while I'm out. Like, my wife's calling me like, it's weird here. And so my shows are being canceled. But during this show that I'm at, this guy wants to follow me. And he was like, hey, man, what's your Instagram? I want to follow you. So I gave him my Instagram and he pulls it up and I think he had like 1,100 followers and I had like 900 and something. And he started kind of laughing at me. He was like, why do I have more followers than you? And
you shamed.
Yeah.
By...
I was like, I don't know why you have more followers than me. That's crazy. So then I had no show. So I'm like, I might as well try to build this following up. If I get to 10,000, that would be great. So now people say, what's your Instagram? I pull it up. They see that K on there. It's 10K. It looks great. So I went home and I was like, I'm just going to start posting these videos. And there's a new app that was TikTok. So I don't have my family and friends on Facebook and Instagram that can watch these videos and go, what is wrong with you? You're weird. I just have strangers that I'm putting it out to. And these people are loving it. And I don't feel weird because nobody really knows me. And so I just went with it. And then after a couple of them blew up, and I started getting this crazy following, I told everybody to come to Instagram. So my Instagram went from 900 to now it's like 1.6 million. And that's
why
I did it.
So you can put that guy to shame now.
Yeah. I'm looking for him. You're listening.
I got to ask, though, that has to have opened so many doors for you, that social media success.
Oh, yes. It's been crazy. I've done things I didn't think I would do. I got to go to Atlanta and interview with Steve Harvey, which was a cool experience just to talk about the TikTok. Little John came on the interview and I called in from like the screen and he was telling Steve like how amazing he thought I was. And then I just met some other celebrities and talked to them and they followed me. Like Leslie Jones from SNL calls my Instagram and leaves voice messages.
Oh, my gosh. That is wild.
Do you remember Edwin McCain from back in the day? He sang a song called I'll Be. And it's like, I'll be your crying shoulder.
Yeah.
He's like one of my biggest fans. He hit me up on Cameo and was like, hey, man, I was charging people $25 for like the happy birthday. He's like, you got to raise this. He goes, you are huge. So it was coming in every day. So I raised it from 25 to 150 and they still kept coming in every day. And then he came out to a couple of my shows. I went out and ate breakfast with the guy. And now he's on tour with Collective Soul and Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish. So now Darius Rucker starts messaging me and I might be going out to one of their shows and just kicking it in the bus with them and stuff. But random stuff happened. I got to pitch a lot of shows to like Netflix and Hulu, stuff I never would have done.
That is okay. You know, it's all right. We have a dump button if we need it. I will say I have been on the air almost a year in this job and I have not sworn yet, sort of knock on this fake laminate, but it's okay.
You know what? I'm doing the Ross County Fair tonight and I have I have two F-bombs. That was my rules. You have two F-bombs you can give.
They allot how many times you can swear.
Yeah. So
is somebody down there like keeping track and they're like, that's two?
Yeah, I don't know.
What happens if you do three?
I don't know. I'm getting paid first. That's going to be my main thing. I want to be paid first just in case something comes. Because you've seen that wasn't supposed to happen, right?
So if you only use one? Can you get to the end and be like, actually, I have one more F-bomb for you?
You know what? That's how I'm ending my show. Yeah, I'm going to try to do that. If I can do that, I'm doing one F-bomb during the show. And I'm going to keep referencing that I have one more the whole show.
There you go.
Then end the show and then just come back to the mic real quick and just say it and get off the stage.
I think that's great. No, like everyone in the newsroom knows I appreciate a good F-bomb, but I have managed to keep it off the air so far. Because it's one of those questions, like for all that's changed, we still get really hung up about profanity.
Yeah. I get a lot of messages on my TikTok. It's like, hey, man, this is great. It would be funnier if you didn't have to cuss. And I was like, you say that. But at the same time, I thought it was kind of funny because it's only funny because he's the 11-year-old cussing. It wouldn't be as funny if I was just doing videos as myself cussing. Because I'm like, yeah, I could clean it up. But just the fact that my 11-year-old is saying stuff. It's really me, by the way. I don't have my kid saying this. But the fact that...
Although some people have asked you that.
Yeah, I have. And I don't understand all of my following.
Do they not know TikTok filters? Like...
You know what? You would be surprised at the random stuff. I had a guy the other day follow me into the bathroom in the airport and I'm not even stand far away. Like he's almost right behind me at the urinal to the point, like, I think I'm about to get attacked. Like I got it. And then I just turned around, like, can I get a picture with you real fast?
Okay. I will just say unequivocally, like hitting up somebody for a photo in a bathroom is never a good idea. Like don't do it.
Yes. Yeah. Please don't. Please. I don't mind photos. I just hate stopping when I'm doing something random. Can I just tell you, you have the voice. I feel like I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts these days. I'm a big fan of this one called Crime Junkie. And you have a true crime podcast voice. Like every time you speak up, I just feel like you're about to start telling me a story. Like, and then she drove down by the lake and that's where she, like, this is great.
I've never heard that. I like that. I've had a lot of comments about my voice. I will say, particularly as a female on air, a lot of people have very strong opinions about my voice.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot, especially in the beginning of, like, she may be smart, but I can't stand the sound of her voice.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I get lots of people that are like, I had somebody, they thought they were giving me a compliment, and they were like, oh, you sound, because I had some vocal coaching, right? I had been mostly a print reporter, and I had some vocal coaching, and somebody said, oh, you sound so much better. I could barely listen to you in the beginning.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, you just smile and nod because you're like, okay, I guess I sound better now.
I could listen to you talk about true crime all day. You should read up a true crime story and just...
Well, tomorrow we're doing a show about serial killers.
Yeah, see?
So there you go. It's a guy who's spent his life writing to serial killers. Like, in his 20s, he randomly, well, not sort of randomly, he took an abnormal psych class and he decided to write Charles Manson, and then Manson wrote him back.
And you have that guy here, or you're talking about that situation?
I have that guy tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Oh, nice.
And how that he became a forensic psychologist and sort of studied serial killers for a living.
Oh, that's exciting. I feel bad you have to do this interview now. You're probably like, can we get this over with and get to that guy?
So where do we find you at the Columbus Comedy Festival?
I am doing, I'm the first headliner at the Key. So I'm going to do Friday's early show, which is at 7 o'clock. You can find me. And then I'm also going to do a couple of the Don't Tell shows. So Don't Tell picked up, they're doing shows the whole weekend as well. So I'm going to do their early Saturday show and their Thursday show. And then I'll possibly just jump on random other shows. You know what I mean? I didn't want to book anything just in case I was, you know, where I'm going to be at. There might be, like, there's so many great comedians coming in. I would hate to have something booked like, oh, Tony Rock's performing now. I got to get there. So I'm just going to jump around. And then if people have space for me randomly on some shows, I'll jump on and do a few guest spots as well.
You're also doing a giveaway where people can come and meet you in person.
Yes, that is, there is a giveaway that you can still get. It's if you go to my Instagram or Easton Town Center's Instagram or Columbus Underground or the Comedy Festival, there's a link. You can fill out a form, win two tickets to my show, two tickets to the Funny Bone, and then also a $500 Easton gift card and meet and greets with me after the show, which will be fun.
That was comedian Jason Banks. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
And I want to say thank you to our producers, Marcus Charleston, Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, our intern producers, Abigail Jump and Kira Kattar, and board operation this morning by Chris Johnston. And thank you all, as always, for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.